It's a big tea thing, and
you just watch me change some laundry, Matt, over Zoom. Man, the mysteries of podcasting.
You're dressed like you're still having hot water issues, so you're dressed like a working man, orange hat and a hoodie and blue collar.
A little bit of a little cold spring, and
yeah, there's snow on the ground in April.
Yeah, it's beautiful out, Matt.
You know what I like about that?
What's that?
Seeing like green springtime summer grass, like right next to snow.
Yeah, it's a shock for the senses, that's for sure. The problem is, if it gets too green, trees start budding, leaves start coming out, snow hits, dead trees.
Yeah, kill your trees, kill anything you planted.
Break the branches.
Any gardening you've started.
Oh yeah, yeah, you got the frost.
Yeah.
This is a very mellow, low-key intro we got here, Matt.
Hey, can't complain too much. Hey, the book we're talking about starts with a snowy scene.
It does.
It's one of my favorite. It sunk me right back into it. When he's talking about how fire and out in snow, like, you know, outdoor fire when snow falling makes him think ancient Rome or ancient times.
Yeah, just accepting that you're cold and trying to warm up as best as possible.
Well, I mean, that wasn't his point. Well, he liked the scene. He liked the image, you know, like Romans building a fort, you know, out on the front.
How much convincing would it take for me to get you to go camping during the winter?
I'd do it. I think I'd be more willing to do it than you would.
Yeah, I know. That was a trick question. I was supposed to come out on top on that little scenario, Matt, and you just flipped the tables on me. Have you ever gone camping yet in the wintertime?
Once. I think it was like, I want to say it was February, March-ish, but I don't. Yeah, but it was up in the mountains.
Okay.
It wasn't real, real snowy, but it was chilly. It was cold.
I know. I feel like, I like
that. Maybe it was October. It's October, so not winter, but it was cold.
Pretty cool.
Up there. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's a pretty low-key intro here this week, man.
Yeah.
Are we going to keep this low-key energy the whole night?
I think just slow and steady.
Hmm.
Hopefully just pleasant to listen to. Be hard to describe to people.
Hard to describe. If you started on this episode, bravo, but... I think I'm just going to do the intro, saying, okay, man, if that's not too much to you.
Huh?
Welcome to There Will Be Books, a podcast about books and conversations about books. I'm Peter, joined as always by Matt. Oh, Matt, I think we got off to, before we started recording, you just watched me try to handle some laundry issues for about 10, 15 minutes. And I was complaining about, you know, the timer on the washing machine is not accurate. It says three minutes or 5 minutes or whatever it said. And then it took like 15 minutes. I was complaining about that. You said we should be recording this. And I was like, no. And then you just watched me change laundry over Zoom.
Yeah.
So I think that got me off to the wrong start, Matt. I'm just going to say that.
And then our intro became about laundry. It's okay. It's okay. I think it's fitting thematically. Because our book this week is little slices of slices of life. Not a lot of plot, so to speak. You know, just.
And what book are we talking about this week, Matt, and reviewing?
Well, Anthony Powell's A Dance to the Music of Time. The first one.
Book one.
Yeah, book one. It's kind of confusing. There's 12 books split up into four volumes, which are called movements. So... Book one in the first movement, question of upbringing.
I wonder, I didn't look into this. I don't know if that whole movement thing came later, if that was a part of like the release. And they were just like, you know what, how we could package these up is if we just split them up in the three books into thing and just call them movements. I don't know if that's the thing. I just made that up.
Well, there are individual copies. If you're researching... Yes. I've seen you could at one point buy them individually. It works because the painting that the book's named after, the Nicholas Hussein,
Saying, which is, yeah, it well.
there's a dude, there's a person on each of the four seasons is on each of the four movement covers.
And the University of Chicago Press, who did like a kind of their edition of the book. I think you have the same edition. It's kind of like the main American edition, I feel like, unless you go back early. I don't think there's been a more recent one, has like a uniformed kind of
They're really cool.
cover art. They're really
I like
on the
them.
shelves. This book, I kind of knew about it vaguely. It's on the Modern Library Best 100 Novels, like the whole thing. And I kind of was like, okay. And I'm a big fan of that list. It kind of got me into reading. But you, I think you were the first one that I knew that you read the first movement. So did you read the first three books, or am I
That at the time when we met, yeah, I would have read the first one.
first one?
Yeah.
Okay.
First three, I believe.
And when we discussed this book, you always said, like, if you were at, like, I think you said, like, if you're at a dinner party and they ask you what you're reading, you would maybe say this book, and then they'd be like, what's it about? And you would kind of struggle, right?
It's hard. Yeah.
It's
Do
a
you see what
hard
I mean? Yeah.
book and books in general to describe and sort of sell to
Yeah.
somebody. Well, it's an odd book, right? It's so I've read the first three books, so I've read the first movement, and then revisiting this, I enjoyed it a lot, but I was also thinking, like, how would I describe this book? Because it's essentially our narrator, Nicholas Jenkins. It's like his, I mean, the title of the book that we're going to be discussing, A Question of Upbringing, is it's like his upbringing from kind of like a prep school in England, kind of the friends he meets, the people he kind of runs into, his family, all these sort of like circumstances, but there's no real driving plot, so to speak, of, I would say. It's
I
almost
mean, so
snippets of life.
I mean, in a certain way, it's easy to describe, but it's just not very boring. It's kind of boring, and then maybe doesn't sell the book.
It sounds, when you describe it, it sounds tedious in a way, right?
It's an observant kid making his way through England. The first, this one is interwar, about the early 1920s. A kid. He's his last year at an Eton type prep school and then his first year at Oxford. But he didn't really say Oxford, but you can kind of read between the lines. And that's about it. And that doesn't really make people go, wow, I really want to read that. It's like it's very, yeah. But I think it, with you and other people, you get a certain sense. I wouldn't recommend it to everybody, but certain people, it's just like Cloud Atlas was. It's just like, trust me. You'll like it. I can't really describe it, but you just have to trust me that you'll find it interesting.
It's a very, I don't know if it's an acquired taste makes it seem like, oh, you're not, it's it, there's something wrong with it. I feel like if you say it's an acquired taste, but there is a rhythm to the book that I think you kind of have to adapt to a little bit. About, you have an expectation of like a normal kind of like
Flat.
plot, and sort of like, okay, I expect X, Y, and Z maybe to happen, or like this is, we're not going to introduce more characters at the end of the book that are only there for like 40, 50 pages. So it kind of breaks, you kind of have to get into the rhythm of the book, I would say. And then I think once you do that, and you kind of, okay, it's really rewarding in a, it's kind of like a character study, I would say, is the main driving force, or just the nature of, I was trying to think, write like a sentence about what it's the nature of relationships and how they start and end with no, sometimes there's a big event, sometimes there's not. And sometimes people that you thought were going to leave, like didn't have importance in your life at one point, will have importance later on in your life. Some people that you ridiculed sort of surprise you in ways. So I don't know. It's very, observant and interesting how it's done and written. And so you're kind of engaged that way because you're not sure, just like life kind of like throws you surprises. The book kind of surprises you, like, oh, this character has come back in his life. I was reading some article where he was talking about how, books or like novels don't like to just make up plot lines just by chance, like chance events happen. But he's like, in life that happens, so why can't a book just sort of have that happen with characters? So I thought that was interesting.
And there are people who keep popping up in your life when you don't expect it. Like Widmer Poole's always popping up in Nick Jenkins' life. And that happens. I was like, oh, there's that guy again. So it's pretty realistic. And I should say it's not a gimmicky book. Like a lot of this stuff and a lot of the kind of I guess it's not warnings, but these kind of things we're throwing out, like just know this about the book. A lot of the times it's like the postmodern meta gimmicky novels say stuff like that. This is very straightforward. It's just, just an
It's
observant kid writing down.
in the it's it actually starts off very strong because it's about this like close group of friends, or he kind of wonders if they're a close group of friends. Him, Jenkins, Stringham, and Templar are sort of like the three kind of friends. And then their dynamic, and then Widmer Poole is sort of, he's not really a part of the group, but he's almost like, as as you look back on growing up, there's always like certain characters that you have in your life, kind of like, oh, that kid was like that. He was sort of, I don't, not the outcast, but he sort of did his own thing. And then, yeah, I don't know, he
And
sort
a
of,
little off, a little,
and sort of just trivial things that, like, oh, he's well known because he has a large overcoat or something like that. And then the book is also based around these teachers. So there's headmasters that are kind of have an importance on his life. And then later on in college, there's I don't know if I identified that I didn't have this like exact experience, but I could definitely sort of appreciate the characters he creates of like the students who want to impress the teacher, right? Who want to one up and be like,
Oh.
well, I'm actually a good, right? Like, I'm the person that you should pay. You know what?
Well, they're how they're competing for Sillery's attention.
Yeah. So there's all those dynamics that I think subtly just drive the novel in a very interesting way.
Character study would be the way to describe it. He's describing the type of people you run into. That you would run into if you live that life.
So
Kind of.
one of my favorite quotes is like at the very end of the book, and I thought it kind of wrapped up sort of the overall all theme of the book. And I think it's like appealing. It's like a, okay, why do you want to read these books? He goes, human relationships flourish and decay quickly and silently, so that those concerned scarcely know how brittle or how inflexible the ties that bind them have become. I don't know, I thought that was a very observant way of describing not just like what's going on in story that we have, but just in like relating to the reader and sort of expounding on kind of what life brings at you. And I don't know. I don't know. It's very, I actually had a question for you. It's considered a comic novel, and I you find like the comic elements in books far easier than I do. I don't know. I'm just more serious, I guess. And I think there is some comedy in this, but I didn't find it, maybe in a very British way. It's like a very comedic novel, but I don't know if it is to like an American comedic sensibility.
It's funny in moments and it's British, very wry British tone. It's not like a melodrama. I don't know if it's comic as contrasted to, melodrama. I would say kind of a wry British undertone. And sometimes the jokes are it's like a paragraph long that it takes to the very it's like a long-winded paragraph to get to the punchline. But hey, before we get too far away from the intro and how hard it is to recommend it to people, I want to quote. I dipped back in. I read a couple essays by Christopher Hitchens on Anthony Pohl. He's the reason I read a bunch of him in college. He's the reason I knew about Paul. He's the reason I know to pronounce it Paul and not Powell.
Yeah, if you're wondering, it's spelled, it looks like Pal, but it's Paul.
Sorry.
I saw a video.
And Hitchin, yeah, and Hitchens writes an essay. He saw Paul giving a talk in Boston, and he was like, "Oh, I suppose you'd pronounce." He was asked about the pronunciation. It was like, "I guess you'd pronounce it the way you would, like your Lowell." Which is
Okay.
the famous Boston fan, Lowell, so it rhymes with,
Oh.
Paul, yeah. So, but he's, oh, this is Hitchens on Powell, Paul. I have never induced anyone to try him and been subsequently cursed for my pains. Indeed, I have been thanked in almost broken tones.
Okay.
The broken tones is a little of like, hyperbole, winking hyperbole. I kind of get like if you know the type of person who likes to read stuff like this and you recommend it to them, they'll appreciate it.
I do. I think a reader who appreciates good characters and just endless supply. This is a minor criticism. There's almost too many people in the
No, I don't buy that. People say that about Game of Thrones too. If it's like the kid's life, is Nick Jenkins' life? Are there too
Yeah.
many people in your
I
life?
do minor. It's just there's
Driving.
a lot of characters in this book. When I was going through it, I was like, oh, I forgot about that character. There's a whole section where he's in France, and there's like that's where the purpose of that is he sort of sees Winder. I can never pronounce his name right. Windermere Pool and
Widmer Pool.
Widmer Pool in a different light, which I think is an interesting.
Well, and he just goes to France in between high school and college,
Got to improve your French, Matt.
or between prep school and uni, so he can learn French. And amongst all the people there, Widmer Pool pops up again. And you see them in a different light than just being kind of the weird outcast in high school. Anyway,
Somewhat depressive. We have
sort of.
an Uncle Giles who appears many times.
You notice his parents aren't in it yet.
No.
It's uncle, school friends, professors, which is also kind of accurate, like for a kid in
So yeah,
boarding school.
I think yeah, that I think that's a good point because I think it is a lot of him on his own trying to figure out and sort of identifying how I don't know, not how healthy relationships are, but like the dynamics between people and do they really are they only kind of friends because they live on the same floor or whatever, or are they actually friends,
Well, I think they are friends. And then later on, as they grow up, they realize, or they just, like will happen. You kind of grow apart, you lead different lives. Yeah. One more Hitchens thing about what it's about and or about Pole and how we kind of approach the book and what makes the book worthwhile. It's like Paul shows a great and omnivorous curiosity about the lives and motives of others.
I think that's very observant. I
I
agree.
mean, and that's basically it. If you think about it, I mean, that's why that should be the dividing line between what makes serious literature versus just something fun to read is like, are you concerned with people, how and why they operate? And that's basically it. And this is one of the best books I've ever read. About just people and what motivates them. Powell get very, very deep into the weeds, like the subtleties of why people act and do what they do.
No, I really like the book. I wouldn't say I love the book. Because I do think there's a distance to it that I just is only just a personal preference. It's just a little, it keeps me a little bit at bay. Just for my personal taste. Like it's just I really enjoy the story. I like being with all the characters. I like meeting. Even though I get confused about, okay, have I met this character before? Oh, this is the so-and-so's, stepfather or whatever. It is the cast of characters is like varied and interesting. But there's a slight distance between the narration and the story. that is just for me. I'm like, I don't know if it totally like is my favorite aspect of the book. But it nonetheless is a very enjoyable book.
It's a desert island book for me. It's
Desert Island book for
fantastic.
me. Really?
No, it's fantastic. And I think distance is kind of why he's able to pry in the sort of distance, because you're not really privy to, he doesn't do a lot of self analysis. Always his eyes kind of
Yeah.
his eyes kind of focused outward. And so he's got a really good grasp on the other people in his life. And at least so far in this first one, you don't get a good anything internal in Jenkins is kind of you have to glean or piece together through hints about what he thinks of other people, which I think is I like that sort of thing.
It's interesting. I mean,
Especially contrasted to a lot of modern so-called lit fic, where it's just all internal and they don't
that's
care about other people, or they're just judging other people versus trying to figure out why they do what they do.
Jenkins seems more interested in everything outside of himself in a way. Or maybe that's just the storytelling, because you don't learn a ton about him. But you
He
learn
learns
a
more
ton
as
about the people that he sort of interacts with.
And that's how he's chosen to tell the story.
I was trying to come up with a fun analogy, Matt, of specifically the section of the book where he's in college, and it's sort of the Sillery is sort of the he's a teacher or whatever, and all these kind of young students are trying to vie for kind of his approval. And if here's the analogy I came up with, it made sense in my head. I'm going to try to explain it to you, Matt. All right, you ready? You're on a two-lane road, all right? And the right lane is closed, but you're in the left lane, all right? And everyone's kind of getting over into the lane, all right? And what you're supposed to do, and I didn't really know this until kind of recently, is the cars on the right are supposed to just keep driving and then eventually get over, not get over as soon as possible. And so it kind of is maddening sometimes if you're in the left lane, because people will just cut in front of you and get way ahead of you. Kind of, and it seems like unfair. And that's how I pictured this. Like the social structure of this college is, it's not fair in a way. And I think there's some like resentment a little bit in sort of the people there, and certain people take college more seriously than others. So.
No. Well, I think I get what you mean. I with Quiggin is kind of the guy who's at least sees himself as having some potential as like a poet slash writer or something. And he's very resentful because he's in that little group with Sillery. I
Yeah.
think you kind of know what you mean. Yeah, Oxford, the upper crust British system is pretty unfair. But I think Sillery is an interesting character. For the listeners, I mentioned this before, but think Slughorn from Harry Potter.
Slughorn.
Yeah, and that char the character Slughorn in Harry Potter, I am 98% certain came from this character, Sillery. Like as a conscious homage or whatever to Anthony Paul. They're so familiar. I said this when we nominated the book. I had read I was, I think, no, I was, because I read Harry Potter later in life, and I'm reading whichever one of them where Slughorn pops up. And I'm like, where I haven't seen the movies. I haven't read the, how do I know this character? I know this Slughorn, like what, where have I read this before? And it hit me, oh, it's Sillery from Dance the Music of Time. It's 100%, it's real. I'm not, it sounds like, oh, I'm
Now
making,
100%. I thought it was 98%.
I'm like 100, 98 to 100, depending on. But so Sillery is he's not a typical Oxford professor either. His deal is kind of he likes to collect promising students, right? And he basically, his game is he likes to kind of trade in, he likes the kind of the low level power and influence that sort of thing can wield. And so a promising student goes on to become a member of parliament, and you can kind of pull some strings. and and kind of coast on their reputation. So that's what he's doing. And Jenkins and some other people, all the promising students, kind of get invited to drop by Sillery's office. And so he's more of that type of guy than an actual professor.
He almost pits them against each other, right?
Well, he picks Quiggin and Members against each other, kind of on purpose, because Members is a little snobby towards Quiggin. And I think Quig or and Sillery realizes, like, well, you guys are kind of from the same background. And so to put Members in his place, he kind of mentions they live on the same street at home.
There's Truscott there too.
Yeah, Trescott is the promise, like the kind of big shot
I
who
like
works
how,
with the finance guy.
so this is sort of how Paul like introduces characters through the through this telling of the story. So here's I like this little section about Truscott. This new arrival I recognized as Bill Truscott, who had gone down 2 or 3 years before, and I had never previously met him, but I had seen him and knew his name well because he was one of those persons who, from the earliest years, are marked down to do great things, and who so often remain a legend at school or university for a period of time after leaving the one or the other, sometimes long after any hope remains among the world at large that the promise of earlier years will be fulfilled.
Yeah.
That's a little melancholy in a way.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I really like that. It's sort of the legend will remain there even if they don't really go on to do great things.
Yeah, just because you're the bright star in college doesn't necessarily mean you're actually going to go on to bigger and better things. But at this point in the book, Truscott is like, oh, he'd be like, what? I don't know. Like the cool kid coming back, like the kind of legendary college guy coming back a couple years after. I like this part, the Truscott.
Yeah.
Quiggin, who's a middle class poet, is kind of resentful of, people with money. And he kind of pushes back on Truscott. And everybody in the room's like, oh my God, like you're talking to this legend like that. And Trescott kind of plays it off and is like, takes it well.
That scene you're gonna read from, that I think was my favorite scene. It's sort of like the tea party scene.
The tea party scene.
Yeah.
And what I like, and this is a little aside from Jenkins, when he's meditating on why Trescott took it so well. And he's like, the thought that perhaps he classed all undergraduate opinion together as inchoate substance not to be handled too close to me occurred to me only several years later, after I'd come down from university. Which seems like a small thing, but that's kind of what you get. Like what motivates Truscott, why he took it so well, is because he was kind of, he doesn't take the undergraduate seriously. So the guy pushing back, that's not a faux pas, because he's above all that kind of jockeying for Sillery's attention, because he knows Sillery's in his corner. And so it dawns on Jenkins later, oh, that's why he did what he did. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the college part of this book is my favorite part, even though I think the beginning is also very strong with like this group of friends and like there's a prank on
Yeah.
LaPlace where they
They
like
get their headmaster arrested. To yeah, it's pretty
I mean, that's
funny.
funny, right?
Gutsy, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then so his the our main character, Nick Jenkins's Uncle Giles, stops by his dorm. And Uncle Giles, it's pretty funny. Uncle Giles only wants to talk about the trust, like the family trust and money. And that's kind of like all he talks about. But he lights a cigarette in their room. And they're like, hey, don't do that. You'll get us in trouble, And sure, the room smells like smoke. And LaBaz, the headmaster, just will not let it go that, okay, your uncle's story is plausible. And he like checks into it. He checks the sign-in log. And then like Jenkins is still kind of in trouble because there's no way you could prove that only he smoked. So it gives, LaBaz is kind of a hard case, which is kind of why they feel justified in calling the police on him, saying he's a criminal, yeah, it's.
It kind of what I was going back to earlier, like so LaBaz is in the beginning and then he has like kind of an interesting end re like reappearing in the end, and he tries to instill some like kind of wisdom onto Jenkins, but Jenkins is kind of like smartened up a little bit to be like, I don't think you're actually following your advice. And this little passage here goes, this is LaBosse to Jenkins, kind of visiting him at university. He goes, you know, Jenkins, do always try to remember one thing. It takes all sorts to make a world. Just like very, that's a very, like, okay, that's a good bit of advice. And then next paragraph. I wondered where LaBasse himself truly accepted his own last proposition. Nothing in his behavior had ever suggested that his chosen principles were built up on a deep appreciation of the diversity of human character. He was very much like, you have to do it this way, or else bad
Well,
graces.
and even when they're catching up with whatever happened to Templar and Stringham, he's still kind of judgmental. So,
One other passage just right after that, and this kind of goes into the theme of the book. There are certain people who seem inextricably linked in life, so that meeting one acquaintance in the street means that a letter without fail will arrive in a day or two from an associate involuntarily harnessed to them, to him or her in time. Which I thought was an interesting, I don't know. It's just one of those things where there's throughout the book, there's kind of interesting observations, I would say. Or
Oh, it's full of my little annotation system. And I got like,
give me some of your favorite,
well,
Matt.
you know, it's funny that one you just read, I had
Okay.
quoted. And for later on, I was going to ask you if you had anybody like that. Did you ever notice that? Like, you see some guy from back in the day, and then like a couple days later, you see someone else who was like connected to him or whatever it is, something like
Or that
that.
I'll just get reminded of someone kind of loosely related to that. I think that that's something, life works that way sometimes, that you're kind of like, oh yeah.
Or you think of somebody, and then like later on in the week, like they show up, you see them at the grocery store, something like that.
It's interesting now because this book it takes place in a completely different like way, like how society and friends would like
Social setting. It's a
social
different.
setting, right? So it's just a lot of like, huh. So everything that sort of happens now, where you can like look up people, see what they're doing and all that kind of stuff. This isn't a time, this is 100 years
Yeah.
ago. It's just sort of like, oh, I
But
wonder what so and so's up to. And then you kind of like randomly at a certain point in your life, like run into them as sort of
you can
the
still bump into people at the store, you
I
know,
know, but you know what I
like
mean? There's less like everyone
randomness.
knows what everyone else is doing without asking what they're doing.
Yeah, if you care to check, if you're
If you
like
care to check or if you care to post
Facebook,
about your life and keep, I just, I've let everyone know I'm doing laundry right now. It's good times. Anyway.
laundry's not gonna sneak up on him. But I know there is room for something like this in a modern way. Somebody who's just really curious about people and their motives and everything, less judgmental and more just laying out what they see and why people do what they do. You don't see it a lot.
Yeah, it's sometimes when I'm daydreaming or something at work or something like that, I always think maybe the way culture and society has gone, it's just not healthy for us. So you need time just to think and not
No,
like
of course it's not.
get
But
on your phone or get doing this or just have time to think and think about things and sort of contemplate like relationships between people, friendships, adversaries, sort of stuff like that. And I don't know if there's like time in the day or we have constructed our lives to be like there's no time in the day to think about those things. So
oh, sure. Well, there is, I'm saying there's room for a book. Somebody wanted to do a book on it. I'd be interested. I actually don't know how well it'd sell, but I'd be interested if you could pull it up, or if you know anybody who does something similar. Because this is
yeah.
it's a tightrope
Yeah, it
to just be
is.
like, I'm gonna lay out my life and not really have a plot or anything exciting happen, and just or the excitement will come from the thrill of recognition that the reader gets when, oh, I've had that happen too. It's like, oh, I
Yeah.
get that. Or I know Widmer Poole. I
The
know
thrill
somebody
of
like
recognition is a good way of
that.
I think that's That could be a
Yes.
selling point, the thrill of
The
recognition.
thrill of recognition.
Oh yeah. Because
Yeah.
I got that thrill in the college. I'm like, oh yeah, like I didn't go to like a fancy college or anything, but there was always like these characters imagining people that I saw in my own life, right?
Well, there's the angry put upon
So you
guy.
don't have to have gone to like, upper crust English, schooling to get
Well, that's the point, because people are people, and
people are people.
this is who Anthony Pohl saw, and he can realistically write it in his fiction. But I mean, they're not literally my uncles, but I know people like Uncle Giles. You
Yeah.
know, like people like that, constantly put upon, singly folk, always talk to you about one thing. Nobody in their circle really takes them seriously. But it's like, okay, you're gonna talk about the trust again, or what, the initiative. He's all,
Yeah.
it's just, there's a well-worded thing where he's like, rich people have more initiative and resources, and so do poor people. And the only person in the world who is left without any sort of initiative is Uncle Giles. No, along the line, I have noted here, he talks about when he goes to France, and there's that guy, the French guy, with his synthetic jokes. He's telling, just the equivalent, modern equivalent would be like those little email, like chain dad jokes. The
Yeah,
guy
yeah.
constantly telling these kind of lame, Jenkins calls them synthetic jokes, and he makes a point that they're similar to Uncle Giles' synthetic skepticism. And I like that concept. And I mean, it's not like prefab, almost like prefab skepticism. You give Uncle Giles any sort of situation, and he's got a whole little pre-built thing, and you can just be skeptical about that. And I got to thinking, I really think that's a whole, you see it all the time on like Twitter and stuff, whereas people's prefab, here's my prefab or synthetic intellectualism, here's my prefab cynicism, whatever it is. Give me a book, give me a movie, and I will tell you, if you're cynical and have a synthetic cynicism, I'll tell you why this is terrible. I'm just not up for the, or, I'll make it sound like I'm really smart, and I'll try to be intellectual about it. People have all sorts of synthetic or prefab opinions.
I like that.
You know what I mean? I was like, oh, that's a perfect way to put it, because you see it all the time. I have my synthetic political views you can project onto whatever it is. But yeah, synthetic cynicism.
Good stuff. Any other more sections, quotes?
Oh yeah, I have like 20, Peter.
Come on, give me some
Buckle up.
more. Give me some more.
We got until your comforter dries, right? We got time. Let's see. I liked at the end. So Nick Jenkins' romantic life is touched upon here.
Yeah,
He has
it's
a crush on his friend's younger sister,
Templar, Jean Templar.
Jean Templar. She pops up later. But he also has a crush. There's a girl when he goes to France who kind of looks slash reminds him of her, and they kind of almost hold hands. They're kind of flirty. It's, like kids that age. And then at the very end, he gets this whole speech worked up. Suzette is her name, and he's going to tell Suzette, not quite blatantly how he feels, but he had a whole thing worked up about how pleasant it had been and blah blah blah. And he sees Suzette's hat laying outside this like little alcove they're going into, and he
Yeah.
goes in,
Section.
sees a
Yeah.
silhouette, and he thinks it's Suzette, and he gives the whole speech, and turns out it's this older married lady, and it wasn't Suzette at all.
Madame Dubuisson.
I'm doing a song. But he talks about how it kind of strangely he felt better that he just got it out and said it. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? He didn't go find Suzette. He's like, now that I said it, I feel I needed to say, even though it's the wrong person, which is a comic situation.
He goes, that particular card had been played, and the curious thing
Yeah.
was that its effect had been to provide some genuine form of emotional release.
Yep.
So, like, the emotional release was the key thing,
Yeah.
not necessarily like Suzette being like, oh, I love you.
Yeah.
Oh, you know.
And it reminded me actually of I don't know, in the Manticore, where David is in therapy. He realizes that he thought his lifelong love, his long lost love from high school, was really just projection. You project all those sentiments you want to feel towards another, you latch on to this girl who's just like a person like everybody else. But it's a projecting all that stuff onto somebody else, which Jenkins does it too, because I think that's what you do when you're that age. You don't really get to know the person. You project whatever you want to feel. You're feeling ready to feel these things about a person you're attracted to. And so you just kind of like, oh, and you fall in love, but it's not really, you're blinded by, yeah, your projections.
Which is, you just mentioned the Manticore, and I was trying to think of like what other books are kind of not like this, but like if you like X, would you like this book? And I think if you like Robertson Davies, I think you would be drawn to these books.
Yeah,
I
if
think it
you.
has a similar, it's not like a similar story in any way, but it's a similar, I don't know, sort of style. Like the writing seems vaguely similar.
If you have the patience for the Robertson Davies,
I think
I
it's patience too. Yeah.
yeah, if
That's
you're interested
the
in that sort
patience
of
of the
thing,
story.
it's people. There's a little more fireworks in the Davies, but it's not good. Yeah, that's a good point.
Because I was, yeah, I don't know. As far as contemporary writers,
I want to say if you like Wendell Berry, it's a different social setting, but Wendell Berry is a similar writer, and that it's kind of a slow, easy pace. And at least with Jaber Crow, you're just
I
in the
would say,
narrator's head. You know more about Jaber's
yeah.
emotional state, but you're just in this guy's head, and he's just describing life as lived. It's pretty similar in that way. It's not bucolic America. It's
What's
up across England, but still, it's a
it's
similar setting.
been called? Who is this compared to? Proust,
Proust.
yeah.
Proust, one. The English Proust.
I haven't read that, so we
Yeah.
can't. Cat just jumped on the table, man, as you can
I
see.
see him. Her.
I don't, yeah, it's kind of a unique reading experience. Just
Great.
because you know, I guess going in, you read book one and you're like, oh, this is kind of a, I don't want to say like a lifelong project, but a 12 book serious literary series is, that's unusual, right? You get that in mystery series, you get that in sci-fi fantasy series. You don't typically see that in sort of, literature, so to speak, like
Yeah.
capital L,
Yeah.
you know what I
The
mean?
guy, yeah, from a high schooler to an old man.
That's
Yeah.
kind of, it's a very ambitious project. You kind of, he hints at kind of like the future, like a character will be introduced. I can't remember which one, it'd be like it'll be 20 years before I see that character again.
Sonny Fairbrother.
Yes,
We'll see
that.
Sonny again.
So it sort of hints at bigger, I think these books came out, this came out in 1951. I think the last one came out in 75. I
Yeah.
want to say 74, 75. So 12 books in 25 years-ish is a pretty good clip.
Yeah.
So there had to be some sort of planning, I feel like, to kind of, I couldn't imagine you could kind of write yourself into a corner if you weren't careful. With these books. So
I think he knew what he was doing.
yeah, these,
He knew
this isn't
that.
his first, I think his first novels came out in 1931. So he had written before this, but
Yeah.
this is, that is definitely is like his masterpiece, so to speak.
Oh yeah. And he turned around and wrote a memoir after this.
I
That's
saw
on
that.
my list of things to read, is the like finish these and then turn around and read his memoir to see how, like, okay, who was who? Like how much of
Yeah,
his.
there's a lot of debate about who's like, he's been asked. I saw some interview with him where he's always, he was constantly asked who's Winder, I can't say his name,
Widmer Pool.
Widmer Poole. He was constantly asked who that was because it's kind of a unique character in the story. But yeah, I don't
I
know.
think, I don't think there's a one-to-one for Widmer Pool. I think he's kind of, because he winds up being a politician. He actually, he's a weird, he's one of the more interesting characters in this series. And he keeps showing up and he winds up becoming a politician, like kind of a bureaucratic type guy. And it's kind of fascinating. And you can kind of see looking back, like he was weirdly determined to accrue power, but he's socially awkward. There's a weird sort of, the best American equivalent might be a little Nixon, like a little off, driven in certain ways, but just off a little bit, with a skewed moral compass ish, but like in a British sense. And speaking of stuff coming up later, there's a part, it's a throwaway line, but Stringham says of Widmer Pool, "That boy will be the death of me." And just coming up during the World War II parts, it's important to keep that in mind.
Definitely, I'd forgotten a lot, large chunks of this book. And I don't really remember book two or three all that well.
Yeah.
It's probably been 5 years since I've read this. But to go back to Widmer Pool, he described as having an angry solitude of spirit.
Yeah.
He's a solitude guy, sort
That.
of just. It's kind of a, I don't know if people don't take him seriously or they sort of,
They don't in school, but he
yeah.
doesn't notice it. He calls them an egoist. The modern terms you call him a narcissist. But he's an egoist. There's actually a part that always stuck with me, and I got half of it here. In France, Widmer Pool says just offhand to Nick that I like to go hit a ball against a net, which means golf. He likes to hit golf club into a net, and that's it. And in the next one, he's going to run into Widmer Pool again, and Jenkins is going to say offhandedly, like, "Oh, how's the golf game?" And then Jenkins thinks to himself, "I thought I would get a little, like a social, like get a little credit for remembering something he told me offhand." And most people would be like, "Oh yeah, you remember that? Cool." And they'd talk about golf, like chit chat. Widmer Pool says something like, "Nicholas, I don't have time to golf anymore. I'm on serious thing," or something like that. And then in an aside, Jenkins thinks like, I was starting to gather that Widmer Pool, or with egoists like Widmer Pool, they literally can't fathom what else you'd be thinking of other than themselves. And that always stuck with me. Like, and if you know some people who are kind of borderline narcissistic or whatever, they really like, is really like, they don't appreciate, "Oh, you remember what I told you that 2 years ago about golf?" That's, they literally can't fathom what else you'd be thinking about. So that's Widmer Pool's character. Uncle Giles is like that too.
Yeah, definitely.
But Widmer Pool grows, and it's more, and it's fascinating to look back on it, like knowing, okay, he becomes probably the most powerful person in this circle, and seeing him at boarding school where he's like the weirdo guy. It's a good, it all comes together at the end.
So I hope people like listening to this. We start off with like, how do you recommend this book? Can you recommend it to everybody? I think as we've talked about it, I think we're kind of selling the book, just talking about like the dynamics and
Well, I
sort of
hope so.
the connections there. And like you're hinting at sort of the long game that he's playing, like stuff will come back to the meaning isn't evident right away. Which is a nice, it's kind of not every writer has that, right?
Yeah, he's a very talented writer. It's
Desert Island book, man. Desert Island.
Desert Island book. Oh yeah, 100%.
We should have that sometime. We should make up. I think we did that. Did we do
You
that
did
book
that,
early on? Early
yeah,
episodes?
episode two or
Revisit
three
it.
or four or something. Yeah.
The whole series? Have you finished the whole series?
No, I got up to the in the middle of the third movement, so like 7 or 8 books in, and then at like over 10, 15 years, so it's good to come back and like come back and I'll start from here and go all the way through. Hey, here's another. This is a funny part. When he's talking about Quiggin, the resentful middle class guy, he kind of starts hanging out with him. Quiggin resents people with money. Quiggin's always talking about his work and how important it is. He's got to get to work, and like he means like poetry and stuff. In fact, I thought at first that he worked far harder than most of the men I knew. Later, I came to doubt this, finding that Quiggin's work was something to be discussed rather than tackled, and that what he really enjoyed was drinking cups of coffee at odd times of the day. Right?
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
And
I know.
that's a certain, yeah, that's somewhat that I go, huh?
Yeah,
That's,
see,
I know
that's.
a person like that. Or I might be that
It's
person.
me. I was gonna say it's me. It's you. It's anybody with any sort of artistic, writerly pretensions. I gotta get to work, and it's really just coffee and stare out the window. I also like this. Speaking of people's motivations, this is the next page on Quiggin. Read the whole thing. It's talking about Quiggin and members, and even in Widmer Pool a little bit. People who don't have as much money as the people at these prep schools and at Oxford they're surrounded with. Money represented some element in which he knew himself deficient, rather than the same way that Widmer Pool, when he wanted to criticize Stringham, said that he had too much money. No doubt, in truth, envying the possession of assets that were, in fact, not material ones. So that means, of course, you're a little bit resentful of the money, but Widmer Pool, Stringham, at the high school, college age, Stringham is charming and smooth and confident. Widmer Pool is not that. And Quiggin is the same way with kind of Bill Truscott and the other people. Upper crust people who move through life kind of confidently and assuredly. And I thought there was something important, like true and interesting in that concept that when, yeah, you're jealous of the money, but also you want those other qualities that come with it that you don't have and that you would use, you know, they think they would use a lot better. Oh, people have too much money. They mean charm, confidence, whatever else. And that's, you know, I think it's pretty true.
Do you think you could adapt this
They try, they've done it. It's a BBC series.
to the
I haven't watched it because I'm weird about watching things before the, so I don't want any, and I don't want anything ruined, so I
they
gotta,
adapted the whole thing?
well, I'm pretty, it had to have been. Look, it's a BBC thing. It's a box set type, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think actually there might be what came to mind is like this is sort of in the realm of like it's not exactly like this. It's not that I don't want to say that it's like this, but like Downton Abbey was a huge hit because of like the set piece, like the time and the setting and all that. I think there's a case we made like this the time and the setting of this book and books. It's kind of might be appealing to modern audiences in a way that's kind of, sort of
Yeah.
surprising. It's kind of an era that's kind of hard to like understand or grasp. Like, oh God, life now is so much different, but oftentimes, you know, people are still the same. I think there's something to that, although it might be kind of expensive to make.
Well, I mean, you have a couple set, actually, maybe not, because you have set pieces,
True.
right?
Just think of like the whole scope of it. If you want
I just,
to,
yeah, I don't know how you do it.
you probably have to condense books and stuff like that,
You
maybe.
would, and I'm pretty sure that's what the BBC people did. I'd watch the first disc. I just don't want to watch the whole thing before I read the books because I don't want to know. So, but it'll take me a while to finish them. So it's a catch 22, Peter.
It's pitch right
But
too.
I think so. I don't know how you adapt it without a voiceover because half of it is being in Jenkins' head and reading his observations.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I
I don't
think
know.
that's a good point because a lot of times adaptations lose that the narrator's voice
Which is fine unless the whole thing, the what makes it interesting is.
hinges on the voice of the
So,
yes.
I don't know. Couple, I wanted to hit on this. This is an interesting little side note thing. So, do you remember a couple books later, Jenkins kind of associates with a novelist, the big time novelist, is something St. John, right? And people have kind of figured out, they think it's pretty sure it's John Galsworthy. Right, is St. John, which is, you know, fun little parlor game people to play who's who. But so I noticed in this one, Nick says, I thought it was a well-turned phrase from Uncle Giles, but it turned out he lifted it from a John Galsworthy novel. And that struck me because I noticed in A Time to Be Born, the Andy Callingham character is supposed to be Hemingway, and it kind of clearly is Hemingway. But earlier on in the book, Don Powell mentions Hemingway, the author. So it's kind of putting Hemingway in that world. I don't know if it's to like offset when people say, oh, Callingham's Hemingway or oh, St. John's Galsworthy, they can say, no, I mentioned them in the book. He's clearly not. And I started thinking about that. And then I watched a clip the first 5, 10 minutes of Citizen Kane, because everybody knows that is famously William Randolph Hearst, Citizen Kane, right? They mention in the little intro, the thing that gets the plot going in Citizen Kane, you know, I'm going to get you out there. Kane dies. And then they send a journalist off to like tackle it, like to research his life and figure out who he was. And that's the plot of the movie. They mention, yeah, everybody knows these big name people, Kane, Hearst. It mentions a couple of other big Rockefeller. And it's like, oh, they did the exact same thing. They mention Hearst at the beginning when it's clearly
Kind of
about.
get away with it, yeah.
I know, I just noticed it's a synchronistic thing. It's like, oh, they did it again. So is that, I just wonder, is that a purposeful thing that they do to kind of offset? Or is it just, you know, do they think of them as like, oh, these are their own characters, it's loosely based. But I, three times in a row, I'm like, okay, they're mentioning the person is based on early in the book in order to do what?
Maybe.
I don't know. Does that, let's,
No, I
that's
understand
too
what
many to be a coincidence too, right? That's,
you're saying. They want to get, would they get in trouble for like libel or?
well, they have, if you look like the little
That's
fine
all,
print
it's all
at the end of the
fictional,
book.
like it, any,
Yeah.
you know, relation to
But
actual.
that's a legal nicety with all three of these examples, everybody, and it's all, especially Citizen
Might
Kane.
be kind of
Like Hearst ruined.
tongue in cheek, like, oh, actually, no, I'm not talking about him. I mentioned.
I think maybe it's just tongue in cheek.
That sort of might be it.
It's tongue in cheek. It's something I'm going to look for in every other book where it's.
Clearly, one the
And
characters
then do
stop
you, I
somebody.
want to read All the President's Men to see if they mention Huey Long. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
I'm curious. I got my eye out for it. I'm going to think of a term for it, and it's going to be a little segment. It's
Do
like,
you
does
want
this.
to? Last thing for me. Do you want to continue this? I don't know if this is a reading
Oh.
project of ours, but on
Yeah.
the podcast, do you want to continue this?
Well, Peter, I didn't know you liked it and didn't love it. Which is, no, it's fine. I was
No,
just.
but actually, with you talking about it and the little things, and now me discussing the book and thinking about my favorite sections and characters, I really enjoy the book. I think. The love part, I don't know. I've talked about this before. I like a certain style of writing, right? Like a
Yeah,
certain
exactly.
prose kind. And that's what like gets my juices flowing, right? And this doesn't exactly have that, but it has everything else really I'm looking for,
Okay.
if that makes
Just
sense.
the distance. Well, and I'm a cold and distant person, so that's right on my.
I like my prose.
Yeah.
My prose to
Right.
be. And
Well,
the
what
prose
was
is
done?
good in here, but it's has a slight distance to it that I'm not, it's not my favorite.
All right. Well, that's
But
fine.
I do want, I kind of brought that up to say I kind of want to continue these at some.
Oh, me too. I was gonna,
So
I don't
anyway,
know.
Flashman, this is enough. I mean, we talk about Flashman, you know, what characters would you take Flashman out, you know, Flashman a book. There's probably a dozen characters in this book that you could be like, I kind of want to know more about that character that they
You
did
think
do things.
you, and it'd be Widmer Pool, I think. You're gonna flash when somebody be Widmer.
True. That would be the clear, yeah, the obvious one. Uncle Giles too, because he's sort of like, you know, sure what he does.
Oh, that might be the better one. Uncle Giles. And he is kind of just a, yeah.
Disappears and he comes back.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Well, I was gonna say maybe we just sneakily continue, not make it official, but like,
Read
you
12
know,
books on the side.
but just, no, just like in the next 6 months, the second one probably gets done. You just sneakily read the second
Second
one.
one is A Buyer's Market
Buyer's Market.
for Osbert and Karen. Is the inscription there? I'm not sure.
Yeah, Osbert.
Osbert's a name I've never seen before. Are they?
You know, well, it's very British, old-timey British. Hey, you know, a little game I like to play too. I like to note the books within books. Like if a certain character in a book is reading a book, I'll be make a note and be like, oh, hey, look at that. I read the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood novelization and Sharon Tate's reading Myra Breckinridge by Gore Vidal.
Okay.
So I was like, hey, a cool reference. Did you know in Wonder Boys by Michael Chabon, the college professor lady played by oh, what's her face in the movie, who's having the affair with, whose husband's oblivious and the dog hates him.
Yeah.
Anyway, she loves reading, and that's her attraction to the main character in Wonder Boys, even though he's a mess, the professor, Michael Douglas. Anyway, in the book, he just wrenches off hand. I'd find her randomly reading At Lady Molly's, which is the fourth or fifth book in the second movement.
Is the fourth book in the series the first book in the second movement?
Second movement. Yeah, just briefly mentioned one.
Oh, wow. Ladies, Mollies. It's not like a book that you would know, sort of. I mean, that's kind of a deep cut.
Yeah, Siobhan doesn't explain.
That's
He just lists
not.
it. They're like, oh, I think I know that.
If
Yeah.
you wanted to be more like on the nose, you'd be like, oh, I saw her reading The Dance of
Yes,
the
new. Nope. At Lady Molly's.
fourth book in a book. Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I actually really like Wonder Boys. It's kind of it's four book
I think
dorks.
we should read Chabon.
I'd read Wonder Boys. I like the movie Wonder Boys. I know a lot of people have problems with it, but I actually really like that movie. Book two. Have you read Wonder Boys?
I believe so.
Uh-huh. Might be time to
That's
revisit.
based on that's his own, like,
Loosely, I
he
mean,
had a Chabon had a massive book about baseball, or like a baseball stadium
baseball stadium.
construction that was like a
And it got
thousand
out of
pages and
control.
just never could finish it.
And then he got out of
Then he
this
wrote
by
Wonder.
writing a story. He wrote by writing a story about a guy who's writing a book that's out of control. Like Luce. I don't think he's exactly like that character. That character's a little
He was
rougher.
definitely an author in my early 20s. I was like, I love Michael Chabon.
I don't know about his new stuff, but some the Mysteries of Pittsburgh I really liked.
That
Might be something you only like when you're 22, but
I've started The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay about three times, and I've gotten very far each time, and I still have not finished it. I don't know why. I'm not usually
I
one of those
got about
books.
200 pages in and I really liked it. This is one of those I stopped for whatever reason. I don't know why either.
At us.
Good, but I
Look at
just.
us. That's a book we should probably read in the podcast. It's a kind of a modern classic, I would say.
I'm angling for
Last
Wonder
20
Boys.
years, when I say modern classic. So, any other final thoughts, Matt, on question of upbringing?
I got more quotes, I got more stuff, but I really did just mark this up. There's a lot of memorable passages, good little observations about human nature. Yeah, it's great. I really do like it. I don't recommend it for everybody. So I'm sorry if that's
Don't know,
offensive.
just
But
maybe read it. I don't know.
I like this quote about Peter Templer, who is kind of, well, how would you describe him? The more worldly. His dad's a businessman. He doesn't even bother to go to college because he's gonna go work for his dad and become a rich businessman
I
himself.
could never pin down Stringham and Templar. I never got the sense that they were all that different.
What's interesting is,
And yet they have a falling out.
well,
And Jenkins can kind of clearly see from the beginning that they are different, and they are.
yeah.
I think it's a subtle difference. It's not.
Stringham's old money.
Yeah.
Templer's new business money. Templer's more sure of himself. He's not deep the way Jenkins would consider deep or intellectual. Because so here's the thing. This is from early on. Is talking about Templer's boast that he had never read a book for pleasure in his life did not predispose me in his favor, though he knew far more than I of the things about which books are written.
That's cool.
Which I really like that phrase because he's
Other way of phrasing
worldly. He'd been with girls. Like he kind of knows. And it's the dichotomy. He's lived life versus Jenkins.
it. As
He's
read.
kind of a late bloomer as far as like acting. He sits back and observes, but he doesn't really, he watches people. And it's interesting the scene where Templer and Stringham, it's not a falling out, it's not dramatic, it's not an argument. He just,
The
Poe
car crash
agrees,
thing, the
the car crash, and that's just kind of where they realize they see life in a different
it's
way.
different, yeah.
Cole phrases it, they had fallen out of each other's habit of mind, which when your roommates are living with people, especially back in high school and college. You know how you fall into the same rhythms, you watch the same movies, you have little inside jokes and quotes that you share back and forth. That's a habit of mine. And so the car crash thing kind of brought home, like, Stringer's idea of good time isn't driving around really fast in a car. That's Templar's. And then there are just certain things that they, and I don't even know if they would think it or articulate it to themselves like that. Jenkins sees it.
Yeah.
And then that's an interesting thing. I think when people, if there's no emotional, there's no dramatic thing. It's just people kind of aren't around each other anymore and fall out of each other's habit of mind. And unless you're in a place to reconnect and be around a lot, it just kind of, that's why people don't keep up with other people. You just kind of, you know, there's not that connection there.
Yeah, there's no novelistic thing in life usually of like a big blow up fight or something. Like a lot of times it's just both people, just sort of, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do this, and we're not, there's not gonna be, it's kind of
There's no
all
animosity. It's not even.
unsaid, said, there's no hard feelings. It's just we'll do different things, and when we see each other in 7 years, we'll be like,
Yeah, but
how's it, how's the family sort of
you
thing.
don't even, but and you don't even say that we'll see each other in 7 years. You say we'll see you in a bit, and then
Yeah.
it doesn't
7 years
happen,
later, this happens. You're like, oh, yeah, I haven't seen you.
right? That's and
Well, you
that's kind
haven't thought about the person either, too. So it's.
of, I like the phrasing habit of mind,
That's good.
you know. So, and then there's a kind of poignant scene where Nick drives to the city to meet Stringham. And Stringham's working at a big financial firm and no longer at school. And then Stringham's like, ah, I feel guilty, but I have to go to this party because I'm trying to marry this girl. And actually, it's the closest Jenkins gets to admitting his to talking about his emotional states. It's like, I would pretended I wasn't bothered, but I was actually really annoyed. And as Stringham drives away, he's like, I kind of knew. We made plans to see each other in a week, but I knew I wouldn't see him in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, you know, he kind of, yeah, growing apart from
Thank you.
your perhaps.
Everyone deals with that, so it's a kind of a universal feeling that yeah.
The thrill of recognition, right? That's how you sell this book.
Maybe I do love these books, man. You got me nostalgic. I want to crack open book number two.
Keep going. We won't make
I
a bit. We'll just.
have the first two movements. So I do, to continue on, I do need, they're very handsome looking books on the bookcase. So I would like to get all four.
Form a picture.
They do form a picture.
Just kind of slowly keep reading two, and when we're done with two, we'll do a surprise pop-up second move or second book.
I love the structure of our podcast. Just hidden projects that we don't keep
Yeah,
to ourselves.
it's long, windy, discursive, but there's a larger point, much like a
Life.
dance music at time.
We do have some plans for next week. We're watching the new Netflix miniseries Ripley. And next week we have 10 plans to discuss that. It's kind of a fun new adaptation. Matt's farther along than I am. He's a fan of it. He talked to someone who didn't work for them, so we'll kind of dive into that. And then we got some of our short works that we picked from February, right?
Yeah.
Essays that we're also going to be discussing next week. So that's the tentative plan for next week's episode to kind of give people, if they want to watch the new Ripley series. I know when I first I watched I've only watched the first episode. You've watched six of them. My first thought was not to the books necessarily, because I was to the other adaptation that I know, the Matt Damon and Jude Law adaptation. So kind of comparing that more than the books, though that's weird.
Yeah, this one's more faithful to the books, which, you know, I guess can be good or bad. I'm really enjoying it. Some interesting feedback on people who didn't enjoy it. And I don't know, it's fun because we read The Talent of Mr. Ripley way back. I think he won Most Untrustworthy.
Pretty
He
untrustworthy.
was up for Most Untrustworthy Best Villain.
The actor that plays him is pretty good.
Yeah.
So
some people don't dig heat.
I do think it's worth your time.
We'll get into it. It's at the very least fun. It's well done. But do that. Hitchens and probably the Joan Didion, John Wayne essay is what.
Yeah, watch the John Wayne movie.
Yeah.
Surprise you with the John Wayne movie, a little classic there. So it's been a fun episode. Hopefully you'll pick up and give A Dance to the Music of Time a chance with the first book, A Question of Upbringing. I think we sold it to you in a roundabout way. We'll see. Thanks as always for listening. We also have a Patreon that we do content over on. Our main thing over there is our Thriller Book Club. We're reading The Nine Tailors by Dorothy L. Sayers as our next thriller / mystery, Golden Age mystery book that we'll put out an episode in the next month or so. So if you want to support us over there, you can check that out. I do a monthly article on the books I check out from the library, read, don't read, all that kind of fun stuff, find. But as always, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.